Well, hi again, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of Schwartz on Sports here at New York Sports Day. I'm Peter Schwartz. Thanks for joining us on this edition of the podcast, and hope everybody listening is safe and at home and doing well during this time. And during this crazy time in our country, in our area, we obviously look to sports to kind of ease the pain a little bit. Even though there's no live sports, there's always a lot of sports discussion. The NFL draft is coming up this week, but also wanted to bring my guest today on the show for a number of other different reasons. He does a great job with his foundation that provides a lot of wishes for kids who are not doing well. And I want to bring in former Jets defensive end and current Jets radio analyst Marty Lyons to the program. Marty, it's Peter Schwartz. How are you?
I'm doing well, Peter. How are you?
Doing good. Hope you and your family are well and safe during this time. And obviously, when we talk about, struggling with things and tragedy like we're going through right now in the New York area and all across the country, I think about the job your foundation does to make wishes come true for kids who are not doing well. And for those listeners who don't know, how did the foundation start? And what exactly do you do to try and make some wishes come true for kids?
Well, Peter, I started the foundation when I was still playing for the Jets in 1982. My oldest son, Rocky, was born on March 4th. My dad suddenly died of a heart attack on March 8th. A little boy that I was a big brother to died of leukemia on March 10th. And it was at that time that, I struggled to find an answer. I kept saying, why me? And all of a sudden, one day went to the next, and next went to a week, then a month, and I struggled to find an answer. So I actually reached out to a teammate of mine, Kenny Schroy, and I said, I'd like to start a foundation for terminally ill children or children with a chronic life-threatening illness. Take their greatest wish in life, make it become a reality. So we actually got our 501c3 in 1982, and we started providing wishes for these children. We started taking their greatest wish in life and making it become a reality. So here we are 38 years later. We operate in 10 states. We've raised over $35 million, and we've helped over 8,000 families. But this is going to be a tough year for us, the year of 2020 with the coronavirus. We've had cancel or postpone at least four fundraisers, and my big one's coming up in July, and if I can't have that, I'm trying to keep my nose above water, just like all these other nonprofit organizations.
Right.
I don't know where I'm going to get the funds from, but I'm going to have to keep reaching out to the donors, and it's very sensitive, too, because your donors are, they're either laying people off or they're having their own financial stress.
Sure.
It's a tough time for all of us, and it's a tough time, really, I think, for the nonprofit groups to try to raise money and raise awareness and to try to keep their mission going. So that's where I'm at with the foundation.
What's the general feedback from a family when you're able to provide something that their child desperately wants to experience? I know you've had experiences with the local sports teams, including the Jets, but I can only imagine what the response and the gratitude is when you're able to provide an experience like this for a family.
Well, Peter, when a family comes back, whether it's a trip to Disney World or if you're providing them some sort of computer or any wish, when they tell you thank you, I mean, you can see the gratitude in their face, and you're doing it for the right reason. But those two words mean so much, and then unfortunately, if the child passes away, then the family come back, and the most common theme is, if it wasn't for you and your organization, we would have no memories to hold on to.
Right.
So that's the only thing that we wanted from the beginning, and we get it, and it makes us understand that how fortunate we are, how grateful we should be to be in the positions that we are, and also, how important the work is to continue. So we have to find the money, because if we don't, a lot of these kids, they're going to miss out on an opportunity that will make their life a little bit more pleasant. Maybe it gives them the will to fight to see a better tomorrow.
And hopefully when this situation we're all going through calms down, that the funding is there, and you can go on and do some of the great things that the foundation does. You mentioned the golf tournament. I know you also do a bowling event to try and raise money for the foundation. And, you know, my wife and I, not long ago, we went to the concert to see the Lords of 52nd Street, the Billy Joel cover band. And you do some wonderful things throughout the course of the year. And hopefully, after this is all over, you can continue to do those things.
Well, you know what it is, Peter? It's not just me. There's hundreds of volunteers. It's the staff from the foundation. It's the donors. It's the people that believe in the mission of the foundation. It's the people that say, hey, you know what? If Marty's name wasn't on there and it was my name, what would I do?
Mm-hmm.
And my youngest brother, Phil, who passed away in December.
I'm sorry.
You know, yeah, once said, you know, if everybody can take ownership, you'll be more successful. So that's what I try to get the donors to do, is to take ownership and pretend like it's their foundation, because it is. Without the support of the donors, I don't have a foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Without the support of the volunteers and people like yourself that are willing to go to these different fundraisers we have, I don't have a foundation. So in 1982, when Kenny and I created the foundation, it was a foundation that all of us can participate one way or the other. You can donate money, you can donate time. If you don't have either of the first two, give us some thoughts and prayers. And that's mm-hmm. what we need to do now with the thoughts and prayers with all these, you know, COVID-19 cases, and you're seeing so many people lose their lives. And, you know, it's not just affecting the elderly, it's affecting everybody. And we should do our part. We should stay at home. We should try to flatten the curve. And
mm-hmm.
we should continue our prayers for those that are affected.
We're talking to former Jets defensive lineman Marty Lyons, the Jets' current radio analyst, who we're talking about. We'll talk about the Jets in a little bit and what they're doing, and we're also talking about his foundation that does some wonderful things. I'm glad you mentioned Ken Shroy's name, and I thought he was a terrific player. He's one of my favorite players growing up watching that the Jet teams in the late 70s and early 80s. And I don't know if you know this story, Marty, but you know Ken Shroy, in a way, is responsible for my wife and I getting married.
I did not know that.
I'm going to tell you the story. When I was working for ESPN Radio, we had a night in the Jet suite to go see a Bruce Springsteen concert, and my girlfriend at the time and I, Cheryl and I, were sitting next to Ken Shroy and his wife, and I had known Ken a little bit from doing some radio stuff with him as well. And we started, you know, talking to his wife. She was so nice, and she thought we were married, and we weren't married yet. We weren't even engaged, and she started, you know, talking to Ken. Oh, these two, they got to get married. Give Peter the card for John Paradiso, the jeweler in Manhattan. And a couple of days later, I'm covering training camp. And Bob Parente walks into the media room and hands me a card. I understand you're looking for a jeweler. And he hands me the card, and that's where I wound up getting Cheryl's engagement ring, and we wound up getting married. So in kind of a way, Ken Shroy and his wife were involved in my wife and I getting married.
Yeah, well, you know what, Peter? You just mentioned three names. You know, Susan Shroy's got to be the sweetest person I've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she can strike up a conversation with a stranger, and the next thing you know, she's got a friendship. Bobby Parente was a longtime Jet, a good friend of mine. His wife, Carmen, has been excellent in raising money for the foundation. And, of course, John Paradiso, you know, he's been my personal jeweler for years, and he's donated to the foundation. So they steered you in the right, you know, the right direction. But you still had to say, hey, you know what? You still had to get down on that one knee and ask your wife to, you know, get married. And I'm glad everything worked out, but that's what relationships, that's what friendships do.
Yep.
And, you know, like you said, you mentioned three of the finest people that
mm-hmm.
I'm still very close to.
Yeah, you know, I got a little nervous when I went to John Paradiso's place in the city, because I looked up on his wall and I saw all those current and former NFL players who had bought rings for them, and I said, listen, I can't afford what those people bought for their significant others, and you know, we worked it out. It was, you know, we got a really nice ring, and that worked out great. So I hope that everybody can still come together when this is all over and do some great things with Marty's foundation. I have to be honest with you. I thought of you last week. I've been going through a lot of scrapbooks and boxes in my home of sports memorabilia, going through it with the kids. You know, it's something to do, you know, during the time without sports to watch. And I came across a Jet scrapbook that I have, and I'm flipping through the pages, and I come across a picture that you autographed for me a number of years ago at a Hofstra football press conference. It was the picture of you on top of Jim Kelly when Ben Dreith, the official, called you for giving him the business down there. And I said, you know, I'm planning on having this talk with Marty, and I got to remember to bring it up. What do you remember about that play and Ben making probably one of the most unique officiating calls in the history of the NFL?
Well, first of all, he blamed Mark for it. He called
yes.
up 99, you know. But, you know, building up to that game, you know, Jim Kelly was an outstanding quarterback. He's a Hall of Famer. You know, he was talking about he wasn't really worried about the pass rush. So I believe it was in the first quarter. I hit him right as he was going out of bounds. He got up. He threw the ball at me. I went back at him. And next thing you know, I got my ass kicked because I was going to his sideline. And then right before halftime, he rolled out. And we went to throw the ball. I hit him, and now I'm laying on top of him. And he looks up. He says a few things to me. I say a few things to him. And you know, next thing you know, I started punching him. But at the end of it, if you go back and you look at the call at the end of it, he taps me on a helmet. I tapped him on a helmet. You know, it was just one of those things that happened in the moment. I have a great deal of respect for Jim. I see him all the time. I tried to give him a call when he got diagnosed with cancer, and he's really one of those good guys that, you know, an outstanding quarterback, but I bet if you put him at linebacker, he would have been just as good. He had that mentality. He had the control of the team. And, you know, anybody that goes to four straight Super Bowls, you know that he's a winner. And, you know, it was all just part of the game that happened, and you know, you kind of look back on it, you laugh a little bit about it, and, you know, giving them the business. I talked to so many people about it. And, you know, of course, I got fined for it. On Wednesday, we came down after our meetings, and everybody's by my locker, and they said, you know what, you just got fined $800, and Jim Kelly got fined. And what are you going to do? Are you going to appeal? I go, no, why would I appeal? I got my money's worth, you know.
And you're right about Jim. I mean, he's been such a fighter. Obviously, you know, the Jets and Bills are AFC East rivals, but when you look back on what he accomplished on the field and what he has gone through, you know, with his son, you know, passing away and the work that he's done, you know, with his foundation and what he has gone through in the last number of years, I mean, all you can call Jim Kelly is a fighter.
Yeah, and look at that team. I think what they have out of a team that went to the Super Bowl four straight years, they got eight Hall of Famers on there. You're talking about Bruce Smith and Andre Reed. And, I mean, it was just a tremendous team, and they had Marv Levy up top and Bill Polian involved. So it was a great organization, and you know what? Then you had Tom Brady come in, and now you know everybody knows what New England did. Now Tom Brady's down there with the Buccaneers, and that gives everybody an opportunity. And Buffalo took a big step forward last year by making it to the playoffs. But I think it opens up the door a little bit more for the AFC East, especially for the, you know, the Jets and the Dolphins.
Yeah, let's talk about the Jets, and you know, obviously coming off a strong, you know, finish to last season after they dug themselves a hole, and now they're getting ready for the draft on Thursday. And really, when they come up at 11, Marty, you look at their roster. They have a few needs. Obviously, one now, you know, a big one with wide receiver with Robbie Anderson going to Carolina. But they've also been hard at work. Joe Douglas has been putting that offensive line back together. He signed a bunch of free agents, but there are some really talented tackles available in the first round on on Thursday. And really, when the Jets come up at 11, I think they're in a good spot to get a really good player that's going to help them right away.
Well, I think so. I think you got to have an impact player with that 11th pick. I mean, you got to look at your board and take the highest guy left on your board, whether it's a wide receiver, maybe it's a defensive player, or maybe it's an offensive tackle. I look back at last year, you start off and have a 16-point lead going into the fourth quarter against Buffalo, and you end up losing 17-16.
Yep.
And the next thing you know, Sam Darnold gets mono. Players start to get hurt. Halfway point for 1-7. But the big thing is you made a push in the second half of the season because players didn't quit on the coaches. Coaches didn't quit on the players. And coaches didn't quit on one another. It would have been very easy to start pointing fingers and you have the defensive guys going, if the offense could score some points, we would win. But they kept the team together. And I think that this will be the year of Adam Gates.
Mm-hmm.
He's got he took somebody else's talent and tried to win with it. And unfortunately, going 7-9, that's, not going to take you anywhere. That
right.
Gives you a little pat on the back and maybe next year. But I think Joe Douglas has done a great job trying to rebuild the offensive line. I don't think anybody realizes that out of 16 games last year, they had 11 different lineups starting the game.
Right.
On the offensive line. And it's hard to do that. And this is going to be a hard year because you're not going to have many camps. Everybody's going to be doing this virtual training, and it's going to the accountability of the players. We're going to see which players are leaders and which ones aren't.
Yeah, you brought up Adam Gase, and obviously he's been such a lightning rod for criticism by the media and by the fans. And I remember seeing a stat, especially early on in the season last year when Sam Darnold came down with mono, as you mentioned. But and this goes back to Adam Gase's time with the Dolphins, which didn't end very well for him. But his record with his starting quarterback and without his starting quarterback is so different. The success he has had as a head coach when he's had his starting quarterback as opposed to not when the quarterback has been hurt and you see what the Jets went through last year. And to me, that's the one thing I think you latch on to when people are criticizing Gase is that here's a guy that was a bright young coordinator, coming up and got the opportunity with the Dolphins, now again with the Jets, but he has not had his starting quarterback in place for a lot of the games he's coached in the NFL, and I think he has to get that chance. I think he's earned that opportunity to get a full season with a starting quarterback.
Well, everybody's got to stay healthy, and there's no guarantees whether you're an offensive lineman, defensive lineman, or a quarterback that you can make it through a season. It's a long NFL season. I think you got to do a lot of preparation, and you got to play a little bit more during the preseason. As much as players don't want to do it, they got to get in football shape, and then you got to be lucky. You got to stay healthy. But I think Adam Gase did a great job last year. Considering what happened to the team, you probably wouldn't want to use the word great because they went 7-9, but personally, I think he held the team together.
Yeah.
And now with the lines of communications open, with the GM, the scouting, the coaches, players, everybody getting active in what do we really need, rather than years ago, it used to be, the GM would, make that decision. Next thing you know, you're drafting players and you're giving these players to the coaches saying, all right, I got you these guys. This is who you have to coach. And some of the coaches would go, wait a minute. I don't think that kid can play. Why did you even draft him? And, so as long as everybody can communicate, I think the Jets will be fine.
I hope so, and I hope we have a football season. I hope everything can start on time. I want to close by going back again. We talked a little bit about the old days with Ken Troy before, but as I mentioned, I was going through a bunch of things with my kids and some old football cards, and I have a few of yours in the book. And I was just thinking back to, the late 70s and the early 80s and how special that team was that – that you were part of with the Sac Exchange, and you know, playing at Shea in, you know, late 70s, and then early 80s, the move to Giant Stadium. But the team you had that, you know, in 81 and 82 that went to the playoffs, and you went to the AFC Championship game against the Dolphins. And listen, I remember those games like they were yesterday. And I always tell people, boy, that team should have gone to a Super Bowl. That team should have done more than what they did. But you created so many memories that lasted a lifetime with that team. And I'm just wondering how many of those you know, memories still resonate with you today.
Well, I think they all do. Anytime that you see a picture that with a teammate, it reflects that, you know what, you went to work, you worked hard with them. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get to a Super Bowl. Making it to that AFC Championship game against the Dolphins, which they now label the Mud Bowl, mm-hmm. was something special. But I think what happened to that team was, you know, 2 weeks, maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks after we lost to the Dolphins, they fired Walt Michaels.
Horrible decision.
And then we had to start over. And then the team started to get dismantled. You know, you get rid of Richard Todd and you get rid of Abdul Salam, and players started to get switched out. And there was no chemistry. And then we had a chance, I think it was 86, that we went to Cleveland. We lost in double overtime. You know, otherwise we could have gone to Denver. We had already beaten Denver on a Monday night game, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
But it just never worked out, Peter. And you know what? I'm one of those players that enjoyed his career with the NFL, but I look back on it and the friendships that I built, like with Wesley Walker, Freeman, Kenny, Joe Klecko, even Mark Asnell. You know what? They still exist today. And you know what? I'm just one of those guys that, you know, try his best to go out there, be prepared for every single game, play as hard as I could. And some days that was good enough, some days it wasn't. And when all is said and done, you know what? There's more to life than football. And I think we're all finding that out right now.
Well, I'll never step foot into Don Shula's restaurant. I still hate him for not putting the tarp on the field that week.
Well, you know what? They played on the same field we did. You know, I tell people that it's not like we had the ball and we were playing on the muddy field and they took the ball and they were on the dry field. It was just, you know, it was poor conditions. And I don't blame the field. I don't blame anybody for any mistakes that they made. You know, Richard didn't have a good game, but you know, we could have played better as a team.
Yeah.
You win as a team, you lose as a team. That was a nice little run, though, because we went out to Cincinnati and we beat Kenny Anderson and the Cincinnati Bengals, and the following week we had to go out to L.A. and we beat the Raiders out there in the Coliseum, and they had Jim Plunkett. So we made a nice little run. We just didn't finish it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, look, Marty, you know, we've had so many great conversations off the air before. We could probably talk for hours about the history of the Jets and your time with them and what's going on currently, but we have to end, and I just want to, you know, end by asking you to give out the information for people who want to get involved with your foundation and how they can help contribute. What do they have to do?
All they have to do is go to the website at themartylyonsfoundation.org, and just, it's pretty simple. Little pop-up will come up there and it'll say donate. Whatever you can donate would be greatly appreciated, and I want you to know that you'll be a part of fulfilling wishes for terminally ill children. And whatever we can do to help our neighbors at this point, whether it's a nonprofit or just get through this coronavirus situation, I think we all have to do our part. Like I said, there's more important things than sports. You know, sports have always been a way for us as a society to escape reality. Reality is we have a big issue here that's affecting not just the old, it's affecting every one of us, you know, especially the nursing homes, all these people that are dying. It's sad, and it's sad to say that they're dying alone because nobody's allowed in the hospitals, nobody's allowed in the nursing homes. And, you know, we too will be one of those parents years from now, Peter, as we're talking to our children or our grandchildren, and we'll start off the conversation by saying, I remember when, in 2020, we had this coronavirus. I was locked up in my house, on stay-at-home restrictions for now 35 days or whatever that ends up to be. And this is what I did to make it through it. And, you know, our grandchildren's going to go, wow, you know what, I read about that in the history book. You know, I can't believe that you were a part of it. Well, you know, the elderly that we're losing now, they're the part of history that could tell us what happened in the 30s and in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
So we're losing all that wisdom. But we have to teach our children that and we have to remind ourselves, as hard as it is, you have to stay with those guidelines of staying at home, trying to flatten the curve, and let's all try to do our part. And let's not forget all the doctors and nurses and those people on the front lines. Every single day, they go to work knowing that they're going to have another patient that
right.
passes away. That emotional toll that is taken on them is just going to be incredible. So we have to be there for them. And I would like to give a shout out to one of the doctors from the foundation, Ernie Romero. He's been with us for probably 30 years. He's on the front line up at Huntington Hospital. So he's doing whatever he can. But he is also, every day, he puts himself in harm's way to protect all of us. So why can't we do mm-hmm. the same to try to protect all our doctors?
Yeah, the frontline workers, they are the heroes in this pandemic. There's no question about it. Marty, thank you so much for your time today. It was great chatting with you about the foundation, going down memory lane with the Jets as well, and looking ahead to next season with the Jets. I can't thank you enough, and glad to call you a friend, and best wishes to you and your family with what's going on, and also best of luck with the foundation.
You got it, Peter. Stay well. I appreciate the phone call.
Former Jets defensive end Marty Lyons. Check out his foundation's website. Try to help with what they're doing with kids who are not doing well and are looking for some great experiences. Check out his website. I'm Peter Schwartz. Thanks for joining us on this edition of Schwartz on Sports here at New York Sports Day. We'll catch you again next time, and stay safe, everybody.